Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Yud Gimel and Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "He omeret mukat eitzani." She makes the claim after being found out that she is not a betula, that I was a mukat eitz. V'hu omer lo ela ki drusati shat. And he makes the claim that no, she actually had biyah with someone else beforehand. His claim here is not after they were be'irusin. His claim is before irusin that she had biyah with someone else. But that makes her into a bi'ula instead of a bitula. Now, Rabbi Gamliel v'Rabbi Eliezer omrim ne'emenet. She is believed, similar in the previous Mishnah where they said she's believed. So to over here, she is believed. Rabbi Yeshua omer lo mipia anu chayin. We don't live by the word of her mouth. El harizu b'chazkat drusatish ad shetavi raya ledivareha. She has a chazakah that she had bi'ah with someone until she can bring proof otherwise. I mean, the burden of proof is on her, not on him. Whereas Rabbi Gamaliel and Rabbi Eliezer say the burden of proof is on him to show that she had bi'ah with someone rather than she is mukat eitz. So now the Gemara says, Tanatayu b'mai. What is the claim of each party over here? You have the husband making a claim. What does he want to happen now? And the woman making a claim. What does she want to happen? So Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan says the claims go this way. B'matayim u'maneh. That the argument between them is what she entitled to vis-a-vis her ketubah. She says, I'm entitled to 200. And he says, you're only entitled to 100. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yochanan's Talmid Chaver, says, Amar b'maneh v'lo klum. The argument between them is, according to the woman, she's entitled to at least a maneh, and the husband is saying she's entitled to nothing now. So this goes back to the machloket we saw before, but what the status of mukat eitz is, number one, and number two is, what's the status of mukat eitz, b'shelo hikir ba, but he didn't know about it beforehand. So what is her entitlement in the ketubah now? Rabbi Yochanan Amar, matayim maneh. He says 200 versus 100, Savar Lo Ki Rabbi Meir. He says that this Mishnah is following the position of Rabbi Meir. It's obvious that Rabbi Yochanan is not following the position of Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Yochanan, of course, would follow the Chachamim. He's saying this Mishnah is following that position of Rabbi Meir, Damar, Ben Hikir Ba, Ben Lo Hikir Ba, Matayim, who says that it doesn't matter whether he knew beforehand or he didn't know it beforehand, the woman is entitled to 200 zuz. Mukat Eitz is not called a Bi'ula. And therefore, she's entitled to a ketubah just like a bitula. So her claim is, I'm a mukat eitz, I'm entitled to my 200 zuz. The husband says, no, you had bi'ah with someone else, you're a bitula, you're only entitled to a 100 zuz. Rabbi Elazar omer, b'maneh v'lo klum. The machloka between them here is whether she gets 100 or nothing. Savar lo ki rabbanan. He says, our Mishnah is following the position of the rabbanan. Damrei, ben hikir ba, ben lo hikir ba, maneh. Whether he knew ahead of time or not about a mukat eitz, Mukat Eitz is the equivalent of a bi'ula. Therefore, she's only entitled to 100 zuz. Now, Bishlamah, Rabbi Elazar, lo amar ki Rabbi Yochanan. We understand why Rabbi Elazar doesn't take up the position of Rabbi Yochanan. Dekamuki lo ki Rabbonon. Because he's able to set up our Mishnah like the Rabbonon versus Rabbi Yochanan setting it up like Rabbi Meir. So obviously, we would favor setting up the Mishnah like the Rabbonon. Rabbi Yochanan, my time, lo amar ki Rabbi Elazar. Why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan take up the position of Rabbi Elazar? Kasavar, so here is the key difference between them. Kansa b'cheskat bitula, v'nimtzeit bi'ula, yeshlak tuba maneh. Because if he took a woman, assuming that she was a bitula, and finds out in the end that she's really a bi'ula, she's still entitled to a tuba of a maneh, of 100 zuz, and not velo klum, not zero. So now, hocha, hu kamar maneh, v'hi kamra maneh. If you have that premise, then the argument between them is, he says, you get 100, she says, I get 100. Ma'ika ben tana dide le tana dida. Then there's no difference between their claims. He's making a claim that you had bi'ah beforehand. Rabbi Yochanan says, a woman comes into the marriage with the presumption that she's a bitula, finds out that she's a bula, she's entitled to 100 zuz. Mukadates, according to the Rabbanan, comes in, find out that she's a mukadates, entitled to 100. So now they're both making the same claim that it's 100. There's no difference between their positions anymore. Therefore, he says, that it must be that it's Rabbi Meir, because then you get 200 versus 100, and there's a difference in their positions. On the other hand, obviously, Rabbi Elazar is not going to agree with that. That position, that someone who comes in, b'chezkat betulav, and say bula, yesh lak tubat maneh, he's going to believe yesh la klum. She gets nothing in that case. And that's how he gets the difference between their opinions. Bishmalam, Rabbi Elazar, hainu diktani tarte. According to Rabbi Elazar, it makes sense why we had this Mishnah and the previous Mishnah. The previous Mishnah, which has them arguing about when the bi'ah happened, that it happened before they got engaged or after they got engaged. She says, Ne'anasti, I was raped. But the question is, when was that? Was that prior to our engagement or after the engagement? Whose problem is it? And is it something that she is responsible to disclose? Or is it something that happened on his watch, and therefore it was his bad luck that it took place? So that's the previous Mishnah. This Mishnah is saying an argument about what's the source for the fact that she is not a bitula over here. So now Rabbi Elazar has both of these positions. Each Mishnah comes to exclude a position that we've seen previously. So over here we have Rami Bar Chama, who said beforehand that Mukar Eitz was only in the case of Hikirba. Avalo Hikirba, Divreko, Velo Klum, that she gets nothing. So over here, this Mishnah undermines that position and says that she does get a maneh, even in the case of Shalo Hikirba, because that's her claim over here. Her claim here is a claim of Mukar Eitz, and she's saying, I'm entitled to 100 zuz over here, because even though he didn't know about it, I'm still entitled to 100 zuz. So that goes against Rami Bar Chama's position before, that there's a difference between Hikirba and Lo Hikirba. In a case where she didn't disclose the information and is found out afterwards, she gets zero. So this Mishnah says, no, that's not the case. The other Mishnah is Merbichir Ba'avin, Amar Rav Sheshet, who says that Kansa Becheskat Betula, V'rim Tzeit Bula, Yeshlak Tubat Maneh, that if he takes her in, assuming she's a Betula, finds out that she's a Be'ula, Rabbi Lazar says, you get nothing. And that's against this position of Rav Sheshet. And that's what these other Mishnah says. This Mishnah says that if you thought you were coming in thinking you were a Bitula and then find out you're a Bula, then you, according to the husband, you're going to get zero over here. That's his claim. She should get nothing over here. So we have each Mishnah telling us one Chiddush. Either the Chiddush that if she's found out to be a Bitula, she gets 100, not zero. Or the case of Mukat Eitz, that Lo Hikirba is the same as Hikirba. That makes no difference whether he knew or he didn't know by the case of Mukat Eitz. So that's why Rabbi Elazar has two Mishnayot, each Mishnah coming to knock off one of these positions of the Amoraim. Obviously, the problem for Rabbi Yochanan is, Rabbi Yochanan doesn't subscribe to that position that Rabbi Elazar just said. He actually holds that if she was Nechneset Ve'echezkat Bitula and found out to be a Bula, she gets 100 Zuz. He actually agrees with that position of Rabbi Chiya Ba'avin. So now, how is he going to explain the reason or the need for two Mishnayot over here? So Tarus, according to Ella Rabbi Yochanan, Tarte Lamali. So why do I need two Mishnayot over here? Chada lo diacha kocho de Rabban Gamliel. One of them to teach you the power of the position of Rabbi Gamliel that she's ne'emenet. V'chada lo diacha kocho de Rabbi Yeshua. And the other one to teach you the power of Rabbi Yeshua says she's not believed. Kamaita, the first Mishnah, the Mishnah from yesterday's daf, comes to teach you lo diacha kocho de Rabbi Yeshua, to show you the power of Rabbi Yeshua that she's not believed. Avagav de igal emei mar migo. Because over there she has a migo that she could have said, I was never nivalet. Then she comes along and says, nivalti v'ne'anasti. So the fact that she had another taina, which she could have just said, I'm mukatet. She didn't use that card. Instead, she says, nivalti v'ne'anasti. She has a migo that she should be believed. Because if she really wanted to get out of the problem, she had a better claim. Just say, I'm mukatet. The fact that she said, nivalti v'ne'anasti, now we should believe her because she's giving us the information that she didn't have to give us. So she should be believed. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yeshua says, not believed. So that's the power of Rabbi Yeshua in that Mishnah. Lo mehemna. Now, despite the fact that she has amigo, she's not believed. But Shraita, this Mishnah, is lo diacha kocho de Rabban Gamliel. Da'afagav de legal meymar amigo. Over here, you don't have the amigo anymore. Nevertheless, mehemna, she's believed. Over here, you don't have amigo because she is claiming mukatetz. It's not like she could have said another taina. She's taking the trump card. She's saying I'm a mukatetz. So you don't have amigo to say, oh, she could have said something else. She's saying the other thing. So she has an amigo, nevertheless, Rabbi Gamliel is saying over here that she is believed, because that's the nemanut that the Chachamim granted to the woman, because she's becheskat kashrut, and therefore she has a nemanut here. And that's why you have two Mishnayot, each one to show you the power of the position of Rabbi Gamliel versus Rabbi Yeshua. Right, next Mishnah. Ro'a midaberet imechad. We saw her talking to somebody. Now obviously she wasn't just talking to this individual, there's more than that going on here. Then it'll be a machloket amoraim, what exactly went on over here. But it wasn't just a simple conversation. V'amrula, matifu shalish zeh. So they said, who's this guy? You know, who's this fellow that you're hanging out with? Ish ploni, v'koeinu. She says back, it's so-and-so. And he is a kohen. Now, I don't know if it literally has to mean kohen over here. Could be kohen is just a terminology for someone who is kasher. Kohen is the ultimate kasher. But someone who is kasher. Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer, Umim Ne'emenet. She's believed to tell us who she's hanging out with. Rabbi Yeshua Meir, Lo Mipia Anu Chayin. We're not going to live by her word. She has a vested interest in saying this because it preserves her kashrut as well as the kashrut of her child. And therefore, we're not going to believe her. El arizu b'cheskat bi'ula l'natina l'mamzer. We assume that as she had relations with an atina or mamzer, someone who are psulei akal, that would make her into a psula and make her child into a psula. Again, the burden of proof is on her to show us that she was nivelet l'kashir. Haitam mi'uberet. She now shows up and she's pregnant. V'amrula ma'tibu shel uber zeh. And they say, what's the story with this baby? Who's the father of this baby? Mish ploni v'koenu. Again, she says the father is so-and-so, and he is a kohen. Obviously, he's not around to ask him. Or even if he is around to ask him, he says, yes, I had bi'ah with her, but I don't know if she had bi'ah with other men. It's not absolute evidence or proof positive that he is the father of this child. So, imish ploni v'koenu. But again, she is saying that the bo'el was kasher over here. She's certain, making a bari claim. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Lezer, Mim ne'menet. She is believed. Again, in both these situations, she's believed. She's making a bari claim. She's making an absolute claim that the person was a kasher, and therefore I'm kasher, and then my child is kasher. Rabbi Shua Omer, lo mi pia nu chayin. Again, she has a vested interest in making this claim. We're not going to believe her. Harizu b'chazkat mi uberet natinu l'mamzer. She has a chazakah that she was impregnated by a pasul, until we get proof positive that it was someone else, or she brings us evidence that it was someone else. So we assume, when the burden of proof is on her, we assume the worst, which is that it was a pasul, and it's a mamzer here. When she gives us the claim, she's saying it's a kasher. I just said, I don't know if it's a coin, literally. It just means that someone who's miyuchas is kasher lekal, basically. Someone's kasher lekuna, or kasher lekal. Okay, my midaberet. It's obvious that the Mishnah is using a euphemism of midaberet. So what does it literally mean? So here, machloket ze'iri amar nistera yichud. This woman became secluded with a man, and we're asking her after that seclusion, who was that man that you were secluded with? Ravasi amar nivala. No, not seclusion. She had bi'ah with this individual, and now we're trying to ascertain what transpired here when she had bi'ah with this individual. So midaberet is either yichud, according to ze'iri, or according to Ravasi, it's literally they had bi'ah. They have witnesses that she had bi'ah with this individual. It's like the Gemara Makot says. Gemara Makot says, how do you have witnesses that someone's having an extramarital affair? So there the Gemara says in Makot, they have to be acting like people who were having bi'ah. Bishlama l'ziri. According to Ziri, anu tiktani midaberet. Why does it use lashon midaberet? Because that's exactly what she was doing. She went into isolation with this individual. So midaberet is close description of what transpired over here. El Ravasi, my midaberet. Why would you call bi'ah midaberet? So lishna ma'alyo, it's a euphemism, kirichtiv. As the pasuk says in Mishlei, achla umachta pia, v'amra lo palti oven. She eats, wipes her mouth, and says, I did nothing wrong. So it's talking about a zonah, which is machta pia, be not her mouth literally, but her lower mouth, meaning that she goes ahead and enjoys herself, or has bi'ah, cleans up, and then says, I didn't do anything wrong. It pretends as if nothing has happened. But you see here, the word pia, or midaberet, is talking about a euphemism for bia. And so to over here in the Mishnah, this is a euphemism for bia. Bishlam al ziri, hainu duktani tarte. According to ziri, our Mishnah contains two cases, midaberet, umuberet. The case of midaberet is where we have witnesses that there was yichud. Miuberet, we don't need witnesses because the baby is a witness that she had bia. So we know that she had bi'ah in that case. So here we have two different cases. One case where we have yichud, one case where we have bi'ah. El Ravasi, tarti lamali. According to Ravasi, what's the difference over here? Whether she had bi'ah or she's pregnant. In either case, she had bi'ah. It's the same case, both in the ratio and in the seifa. So hada chadol achshir ba, v'chadol achshir bibita. No, the difference between the ratio and the seifa is who we're trying to give yichus to or protect from having aspersions cast about their yichus. In the first case, we're trying to protect her. Question is she ksherat l'kuhuna now? Could she marry a kohen? Or was she nivelet l'psula? So that's the first case in the Mishnah. The second case in the Mishnah is the daughter born to her. Can she marry a kohen? Does she have a status of psula? So that's why you have the two cases in the Mishnah. One is declaring her, whether she's a ksherat psula. The second case is dealing with her daughter is ksherat psula. Assuming that's a daughter with a boy, it's less of an issue in terms of marrying a kohen, but it still could be a mamzer, and then he could have a problem. Right. Anicha l'manda amar l'divir makshir ba makshir bibita, which we're going to see later in today's daf. It's makloket amuraim as to whether when she is Sheira here, she also can make her daughter be Sheira. Elamanda Amar the Divya Makshir Bab Posel Bebita. According to the Manda Amar, the Amora says that she's believed vis-a-vis herself, but she's not believed vis-a-vis her daughter, Ma'ika Lameimar. That won't fit into our Mishnah, because you're telling me the whole Chiddush of the Mishnah is that her daughter is Sheira. So Ravasi Savak Mandamar Divya Makshir Bab Makshir Bebita. Ravasi must subscribe to the position that says that not only is she believed vis-a-vis herself, she's also believed vis-a-vis her daughter. So we'll get to that later in today's daf, Machloket Amoraim, but that obviously leads Ravasi, he has to subscribe to the position that believes that she is believed by her daughter, because otherwise why are there two cases here in the Mishnah? Amalei Rav Papa L'Abayi L'Ziri Damar, Mai Midaberet Nistara. According to Ziri, who says that Midaberet is that she was secluded with this individual, V'Ramei Rav Yehoshua Lo Mehemna, and now Rabbi Yeshua says she's not believed. I mean, that's the machlok between Gamaliel and Rabbi Yeshua, whether she's believed or not. Over here, Rabbi Yeshua says she's not believed. Hamarav. What about Rav's position that Malkin Ali Yichud, Veino Srim Ali Yichud? That we give Malkut for someone who is secluded, because we don't want Yichud. Yichud is a violation of an Isur Dirabanan. And we're going to give Malkut Mardut, because we don't want people secluding. So we'll give her Malkut. Nevertheless, despite the fact that we give her Malkut, Veino Srim Ali Yichud. We still do not restrict her based on the yichud, meaning that yichud is enough for us to come and penalize these individuals for acting inappropriately. Now, we assume that the seclusion is negative because they will lead to something bad, so we give malkot for that. But on the other hand, we're not going to make a definitive statement that they are a surim now because of whatever happened. Yes. Okay, very good. So Tosafot over here tries to figure out what is the enosrin over here. I mean that the first half is clearly talking about a pnuya, a single woman that we give her malkot, based on the Gemara in Kiddushin, which says we don't give malkot to a woman who's married if she goes into yichud, because that will cast aspersions on her children. So if she's not married and she's a pnuya and goes into yichud, giving her malkot is not negative for her children. She doesn't have children over here. So therefore, we will give her malkot to prevent her from doing this again. On the other hand, a married woman, we will not give her malkot, because people will take the next step or make presumptions that we're giving her malkot because something happened in the yichud, and then that's going to cast aspersions on her children and have problems with yichuds for her children. So we don't give her malkot. So clearly the first piece is talking about malkin ali yichud, it's talking about a pnuya. Ve'ino srim ali yichud, what is that speaking about? Ino srim ali yichud, what is that referencing? Is that referencing a pnuya, or is that referencing a nisua? So if you keep it consistent, it would be pnuya and pnuya. So ino srim ali yichud, what is there to be oser by a pnuya? Now you could argue that she's a surah lekuna, and maybe that's what we're saying here. No srim ala yichud is that she is not rejected from marrying a kohen over here. So ain't srim means we don't make her a surah lekuna. Although Tosafot speculates that this might even be following for ishidish, that even a woman who's married ain't no srim ala yichud. A yichud is not enough to make her a surah to her husband, because we need kinoi vestira, and that you don't have over here. So yichud by itself may not be enough to make her a surah to her husband. Rashi says it's talking about an eshadish. Rabbeinu Tam, because of the question that you asked, says that yichud is talking about the pnuya, malkina yichud is talking about a pnuya, and osrina yichud is talking about an eshadish. But that makes it inconsistent between the two pieces, and that's what Tosu is trying to deal with over here. How could it be that the first piece, malkina yichud, is referring to a pnuya, a single woman, and then in osrina yichud is referring to an eshadish, to a married woman, which is inconsistent. So there he tries to come up with a situation in which it's consistent, and it's referring to a pnuya all the way through. Rav Yosef, Shlit and Teretz, the ain't osrim al yichud, ari b'pnuya, k'mo malkin al yichud, v'lo ari l'kuhuna. Osrin over here doesn't mean asura l'kuhuna, v'ela ain't osrim ota l'vno, shemit yachedim maviv. She has yichud with a father, because she then married the son. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that Anusat Aviv is problematic for the son, then over here, if they had this outside of the context of marriage, they had some bi'ah over here, what is the story for the son? And that's what it means, Eino Srin Al Yehud over here, is that we don't restrict her from marrying the son after she was mityached with the father. As Amar says, Lema Talok Rabbi Yeshua. Let us say that Rav's position is not like Rabbi Yeshua, because here you have Yehud, and we say Eino Srin Al Yehud. We're not oser when it comes to yichud. Yet, with the way Ze'iri is setting up our Mishnah, the Mishnah is talking about a case of yichud. Rabbi Yeshua says, ain't an emenet, she's not believed. Well, she's not believed, the assumption is, she had bi'ah. She had bi'ah, then why isn't osrin ala yichud? So, Mar says, afilu tema Rabbi Yeshua, even Rabbi Yeshua can be, or reconcile with this position of Rav, malasu bi'yuchasin. This is a special extra item that they made by Yuchasin, which is that we want people to be extra clean when it comes to Yuchasin, especially with Kuhuna. So when it comes to the Kuhuna, when they get married, we don't want any Sfekot, we don't want any question marks. Not that Mi'ikar Adin, she's not Nemenet. She is believed, Mi'ikar Adin, she is believed. But when it comes to a Kohen who's coming to marry a woman, we say we prefer you marry a woman who is clearly has Yichus and doesn't have any of this question marks over her history, because that's a Ma'ilah Sheyasubi Yuchsin, that they wanted to make that the Kohanim stayed very pure and we don't have any Sfekot inside of the Kuhuna. So Rabbi Yeshua is saying Nemenet, it doesn't believe that she's not believed entirely. She's just not believed to clear herself in terms of allowing her to marry a Kohen now. But she is believed to say that she didn't have Bi'ah in for other things, like, for instance, this issue of, right, Rabbi Yehuda or Mamzerut, that we would believe her. So now the Gemara says, Meitevei, Ra'ua shenichnasai in mechad l'seiter, they saw her enter into a secluded place with an individual, or their churva, or to a place that was destroyed. In their days, these churvot were places where the shadim hung out, and also places where people engaged in illicit activity. Because a house or thing that was destroyed were places that you could go and get seclusion and then hang out there and not have anybody bother you because people didn't show up. These are places that are off the beaten path. So again, they ask her, what's the story with this guy that you're hanging out with over there? So, Kohenu uben achiabahu. He's a Kohen, and he's my first cousin. He's my father's brother's son. He's a relative. So she's basically saying, hey, don't worry about it. You know, everything's fine. It's my relative. It's a Kohen. Again, Rabbi Gamliel is the position that she's believed. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, lo mi pia anu chayin. We don't live by her word. Ela arei zu bechazkat bi'ula l'natinu l'mamzer. Ashi tivi raya l'dvarea. Again, she's assumed to have bi'ah with a psula, but the pasul, until we know otherwise, until she brings proof otherwise.
Right.
Fine AD. I mean, the burden of proof is on her. So she's in trouble until she can bring a good proof, definitive proof. It may not be enough to bring the guy. If they both admit it, it's a little easier. But still, even there, I don't know if Rabbi Yeshua says she's believed. She might need to AD him to say that there was the guy. Bishlamal is Ziri Hanu Diktani Tarte. The Seter or the Churva. According to Ziri, I understand why there are two things mentioned in this Braita that we just brought down, which is a Churva and Beseter. Because these are two different types of seclusion or yichud that took place over here. On the other hand, according to Ravasi, Damar Nivala, Tarte Lomali. If you're talking about that she had Bi'ah, what does it matter if she had Bi'ah in the Churva, or if she had the Bi'ah of the Seter? I mean, that there's no reason to differentiate in the location. According to Ze'iri, you could say Churva is a place of Znot. That's a place where people normally go to have Znot, because it's a, right, that's a place that people go. If they take a Zonah, that's where they go. So okay, so that's one, the Churva, and the Seter is another, just a secluded, a regular secluded place. So you can differentiate between the types of Yichud and say there's some distinction here. But according to Rav Asi, where the problem is Bi'ah, Bi'ah is Bi'ah. It doesn't matter where it is. If you have witnesses that there was Bi'ah, why does it matter if it was in a Churva, if it was the Seter? Either way, it has the same meaning. So then, according to Rav Asi, Damar Nivala, Tarte Lamali. Why do I have two situations? Chadoktani says, no, it's really one place. The Seter de Churva. One is defining the other. She went into a secluded place that was a churva. One place. Bahala Seter or the Churvaktani. That's a really nice explanation, but that's not what it says in the Braita. The Braita has a big O in between. It says that there are two different places. It says now, Chada the Churva de Mata, Chada the Churva de Dabro. Depends. One is the Churva in the city, and one is a Churva out in the field. So you can obviously see there's a big difference between a Churva in the city versus a Churva out in the field. V'tzrichi, diyash minin Churva de Mata. If you talk about a Churva in the city, the Akamachshir Rabban Gamliel Mishum the Rov Kshirim Etzla. In the city, assume the city is a Jewish city. So the Rov of the people in the city are Kshirim. And if that's the case, when she's secluded in the Churva in the city, then even if we didn't know anything from her, we would say Ala Rov, we're talking about a Kashir over here because we're talking about people from the city in all likelihood. Therefore, she has a Rov supporting her. Not only is she telling us that it was a Kashir, but we have a Rov that supports her word. So that's why Rav Gamliel is Makshir. Well, the churva, the dabra, when you're talking about a churva out in the fields, then the robe psulim etzla. There you can no longer say it's got to do with the robe of the people in the city, because now you're doing ruba d'alma, talking the robe of the world. The person out in the field could be from anywhere. It could be anyone in the world. If that's the case, the robe of the world is not Jewish, or is not an Israel kasher. If that's the case, then there's a lot more suspicion. We don't have a robe that supports her anymore. Same amodele the Rabbi Yeshua. So let us say that, then they would agree to Rabbi Yeshua's position then. V'yish meinim b'ha'ahi, if you only told me that second case of churva that's out in the field, v'ayikama Rabbi Shua. Over there Rabbi Shua says, ain't in a minute. Aval b'ha, but maybe in the city, ema modur Rav Gamliel. He would agree to Gamliel because you have rov k'sherim there. So tricha. So that's why there are two cases here. Two cases of different instances of questions about the individual. So even though we know there's bi'ah here, for sure we know there's bi'ah, but the support to her statement from the rove is true in the city, it's not true out in the field. Nevertheless, Rav Gamliel says she's believed in both cases, and Rabbi Yeshua says she's not believed in both those cases, and that's the chiddush of the Braita in the position of Rav Asi. Okay, mei teve, zo idut she'ayshak she'ra la. This is testimony to which the woman is believed. Now, this is not the only one. This is not unique, but it's the fact that the woman is ne'emenet over here. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, in a ne'emenet. In this case, she's not believed. I mean, this is the basic machlok between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. Or in these instances, do we believe the woman or not? So, Amar Lehem, Rabbi Yeshua. Now we're going to have a conversation discussing their positions. I'atem modim b'shvuya shenish beit. Don't you agree with a woman who's taken into captivity? Ve'eshla edim shenish beit. And we have witnesses that she was taken into captivity. Ve'omeret tohorani. And she comes back and says, I never had be out with any of my captors. Meaning that I'm still tira the kuna. Ain't an amenet. She is not believed over here. This we'll get to in the second parak further on in the Masechta as well, which is generally we have this concept, which is a pesha asur, a pesha hitir. So if we find out the information she was taking in captivity from herself, then when she tells us I was a captive and I'm shera, we believe her. Because the only reason we know that she's a captive is because she told us. So since she told us that information, she's believed that she's Torah. Over here we have witnesses that she was taking captivity. So no longer is it a pesha sur, pesha hitir. We know she was in captivity because we have witnesses. Now, she can't be ne'emenet. So, Rabbi Yeshua says to the Chachamim, or to Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Lezer, in this case, she's not believed. Amrulo aval. Yes. Ein ochanami. Aval is like the way it's used in the Torah. Aval sara ishtecha, which means be'emet. Truthfully, you're right. So he comes back and says, my fresh v'en zu lezu. Well, if that's the case, then why is it different over here? Why over there do we say that she is not believed? And over here, you're saying she is believed. They answer him back. It's very simple. Lezo yesh edim, lezo ein la edim. Over here, she has edim, which is that she was taken into captivity. So it changes the dynamic of whether she's believed. Over here, we don't have edim, ein la edim. We don't have edim, and since we don't have edim, now we're subject to her word. But by her word, they meant it. So I'm like, av lezo yesh edim. Wait a minute, we have Edim over here, Shari Krisa ben Shina. One of the cases in the Mishnah is a case where she got pregnant. So what do you mean there's no Edim? We don't need Edim, we know she has a baby. So we know she had Bia with somebody, babies don't just show up. So we have evidence she had Bia over here. So why in that case is she Ne'emenet? So now the Braita takes a turn, makes it unexplainable at this point in time, and therefore we're just going to read it, and then the Gemara is going to come back and ask us to explain it. So Amar Lo, they said back to him, Rov Ovdei Chachamim Prutzim Ba'arayotim. Most of the chachavim are putzim barayot. I'm the hen, so he says back to him, "Eino pitropus to arayot." There's no such thing as a guardian for arayot. So bamed varim amurim. When is that true? Beidu tisha begufa. That's only true about the woman herself. But if it's talking about the daughter or the child born to this woman, everybody agrees that that's problematic. That she's believed about herself, but not believed about the daughter. Okay, that's the end of the braita. Now the Gemara says, "Maika marlohu umaki mahajule." What did Rabbi Yeshua say to them? And what did they answer? Again, the beginning of the conversation makes a lot of sense if we understand the flow of the conversation, but then suddenly it takes a turn, but we don't understand it anymore. What was the back and forth? So Gemara explains it. This is what they say. Hishavtanu ala mi'uberet. You answered us about the mi'uberet. Matishivenu ala midaberet. So then how are you going to answer us about the midaberet? So what the Chachamim said to him is, okay, number one, Shvuya, we're in agreement. If she's taken in captivity, she's not believed. Everybody agrees on that point. Rabbi Yeshua then comes and says, what about a pregnant woman? That's no different than a shvuya. The Chachamim say, we'll concede that to you. Now, whether they really concede or not, we'll see in a second. But assume that they do concede that point to him. So then they say back to him, what about midaberet? The case of midaberet, we don't have witnesses. So you say, shvuya, we have witnesses. Pregnant, she by definition has a witness that she had bia. Midaberet is the third case. What are you going to say to us in the case of midaberet? Because we don't have edim. I'm like, midaberet, hainu shvuya. She says back to midaberet is the same thing as a shvuya. Amrlo shani shvuya. Shvuya is different. Now, what it means that is it the same thing? Shvuya. Do we know for certain she had bi'ah with anybody? No. We know that she was taken captive. The overwhelming evidence would be that once she's taken captive, that they take advantage of her when she's in captivity. So you're making a leap, which is that we know she was in captivity, and you're making the next leap, which is that she had bi'ah with one of the captors. So then they say the same thing. He says, why don't you say the same thing by midaberet? By midaberet, she went into yichud. And when she went into yichud, what's the overwhelming evidence is that she will have bi'ah with this individual. So now they say to him, wait a minute, amrlo shani shvuya. By captivity, it's a very different situation. Why? Derov ovdei kochavim prutzim be'arayotein. Because, if number one, her captors are not Jewish. Number two is, the captors have no reason to hold back over here. They have a woman in captivity. They're going to take advantage of her. She has no say in the matter. It's not a consensual situation. She can be forced in this situation. So in that situation, we don't believe her because in all likelihood, she was raped in this situation. Even if she's not raped, the Gemara talks about, we'll see later on in the Masechta, cases where because of the Stockholm Syndrome, which is that the captive starts to take on the beliefs or agree with the captors that they are right. So they have a very similar thing here that we're going to see in the Gemara later on, that the woman sometimes gets along with the captors and starts to, even gets married to the captors. We're going to see that happens later on. Therefore, number one, you have huge evidence that she was secluded because they took her in captivity. Number two is you have also an overwhelming assumption that something went wrong over here in this Shvuyah. But in the case of Yichud, what happened? She went, she was secluded with a guy. We don't know who the guy was, but let's assume that, like she said, he was a Kosher Yisrael. She's a Kosher Yisrael, then why should we assume that something bad happened? Why should we automatically assume there was Bi'ah? And even if there was Bi'ah, maybe she should be able to tell us that he was Kosher. I mean that there's a lot more reason to believe her in the case of Yichud than there is to believe her in the case of captivity. So Amalehem, Ma'anami, Kevin Distater, Ein Apitropos L'Arayot. He says, wait a minute, no. Once you go into seclusion, there is no guardian for Arayot. Which means, basically, we can assume she had Bi'ah. The same way that there's overwhelming evidence by the captivity that she had Bi'ah, so too in the case of Yichud, there's overwhelming evidence that she had Bi'ah. Why is there overwhelming evidence? Because they were Bi'ichud. They were secluded. And there's no guardian for Arayot. Now, you can read that in one of two ways. The way Rashi says it is that the Chachamim basically can't be on the hook for her at this point. She acted this way, we can't believe her. Or you could say more simply that human nature is no matter who we put her in there. You could put her in with the biggest tzaddik or the biggest chassid, she still end up having bi'ah because people put in that predicament can't overcome their ta'ava. So certainly over here, that should be the same thing, that we believe that she had bi'ah. So don't assume just because she was secluded there was no bi'ah. You basically can say that's a foregone conclusion that she had bi'ah over here. And it's no different than the case of shvuyah. Tani miyad. So let's look at this first of all. Tarte, it has two cases here. Midaberet and mu'uberet. First of all, it clearly distinguishes between midaberet and mu'uberet. For Ravasi, there is no difference. Midaberet and mu'uberet are both cases of bi'ah. It's clear from this braita that this braita there is a difference because the Chachamim agree by the case of mi'uberet. They disagree by the case of midaberet. They say mi'uberet is the same as shvuyah, but midaberet is not. According to Ravasi, there should be absolutely no difference between them. Tuyufta de Ravasi, Tuyufta. This is a strong refutation of that position of Ravasi that midaberet in the Mishnah is talking about a case of bi'ah. Now the Gemara says, v'tipikulei dahotam rov psulim etzla, v'acha rov kasherim etzla. So now the Gemara goes back to the braita and says, wait a minute. In the braita, Rabbi Yeshua is coming along and saying that shvuyah equals yichud. Why? Because in the case of shvuyah, we assume she had bi'ah. In the case of yichud, she had bi'ah. So what's the difference between them? Gemara says, very simple difference between them. In the case of shvuyah, who are the rov that are with her? They are nachrim. The rov of them are psulim. So what's the question? Over here, when she is secluded, the rov etzla are kshirim. Let's assume she was secluded in the city. And it was a rov yisroel. So there could be an easy distinction here between the cases. How come the chachamim don't give that answer? Why don't they say that? Right, so that's the achronim deal with your case. If she's, for instance, taken captivity by Jews. Or when the rov are not psulim, that it's rov of Jews. In that case, is the fact that she's in captivity the problem? And that even by rov Jews, we assume she had bi'ah. Or is the problem that she was it was nachrim that took her into captivity, and therefore we assume there's a problem? So that difference of how you view the problem will tell you whether when she's taken captivity by rov Jews, whether she remains a ksheira, or she can make the claim that she wasn't bi'ah. So it's similar to what you're asking over here, that Obviously, the case here is clearly Nachrim, and the assumption is that there's a problem with Arayot, with the Nachrim. So now, when you take away some of the factors, what is the din? And that turns, Machronim deal with that. They speculate about what the answer should be in those cases. Right, so now, Messiah later Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. This helps Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's position. Damar, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, the Dibrei HaMakshir, Makshir afilu berob psulim. The Dibrei HaPusel, Pusel afilu berob kshirim. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi comes along and says that the rov is irrelevant. It doesn't matter what the rov is. The one who says that she is kshira, or the one that believes her no matter what the circumstance is. It doesn't matter if it's rov kshirim or rov psulim, she's believed. And the other situation, in the case where we don't believe her, it doesn't matter if it's rov kshirim or rov psulim, we don't believe her. So this supports Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's contention that there's no difference. Otherwise, they could have answered Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah and said there's a difference between rov psulim, rov kshirim. The fact that they didn't take up that position and answer him that way shows you that they don't believe that, that there is no difference between rov kshirim, rov psulim. That's the closure of the argument. Now, there are two things to say. Number one is the Chachamim agreed to Rabbi Yeshua by the case of Mi'uberet. Does that mean that they really believe what he said? Does that mean they really agreed to what he said? Because otherwise, then why are they arguing in the Mishnah? Is this a continuation after the Mishnah? They had a conversation, he convinced them otherwise? Tosfot brings a chiz. Heshavtano Mi'uberet. You answered us about a Mi'uberet, perish. L'didan d'necha. We're okay with the Mi'uberet case. Why? Disha mizana budeket u'mizana. A woman who's having znot checks out that she gets a high-quality znot and doesn't take the riffraff because she knows that it's going to affect her status afterwards. Below dam yilishvuyah. So the Chachamim basically say that by the case of shvuyah, she doesn't have a choice. She doesn't have a choice because she's in captivity and her captives are not Jewish and therefore she's going to be an anusa to make a claim that, first of all, tohorani, besides the fact that even if she's not tohorah to save nivalati the ksherah, that's a very hard claim to make because of the circumstances that are there. On the other hand, when a woman is entering to a consensual znut, then you can make an assumption that she checked out the guy and she picked a guy that's not the psula. So therefore, she's nemenet. So the Chachamim say, basically, Mi'uberet will concede to you in your shita. Not that we concede that point. We'll disagree even by a case of Mi'uberet, because Mi'uberet we could distinguish from Shvuyah. By Shvuyah, there's no way that she had biyah with a ksherah. By Mi'uberet, it's very likely that she picked the man and she had a biyah with a ksherah. Now you, who thinks that that's not the case, that when a woman has znut, she's not discerning, then we agree that you can compare the cases of Shvuyah Mi'uberet. But then what are you going to do with Midaberet? It's a separate case, and that's how we move on to the Mishnah. But Tosfot says that because he says that even though the Chachamim concede here, nevertheless, the halacha is not going to be that way, because they're not really conceding. They're saying we're conceding within your position, Rabbi Yoshua, but we don't agree with that position. We think we can still distinguish between Shvuyah and Mi'uberet, because they really are different cases. Even though they look the same, you have Eidim in both cases, the case is really different. Now the Rabbeinu Tam asks after that, are the cases really the same? Because in the case of Shvuyah, they're kol psulim. Everybody's a pasul. Versus the case by Churva, out in the fields, where we would say that it's rov that are psulim. So maybe there should be a difference between a case where it's kol psulim, and there's just no question that she had to be nivalet le psula, versus rov. By the case of rov, what you can say is rov psulim, miut are ksherim. Chazaka, the woman is a kshera. So now you take the miut that are ksherim, add it to the chazaka, and now you made it 50-50. So why does the rov govern where it's rov psulim? So Rabbeinu Tam answer is because, okay, call it a stalemate. Say it's 50-50. What's the status of the woman? In the case where we have a stalemate in these cases, we go to chumrah. Because we're going to assume that the woman was problematic. And that's why, over here, it doesn't matter whether it's rov or kol. Even if you say rubo kakulo, which might solve your problem, nevertheless, the miut still matters. Because you could put it together with the chazakah. Rabbeinu Tam says in the end, it doesn't matter because when you put the miut together with the chazakah, you end up at 50-50. That stalemate does nothing for you because 50-50 is the chumrah. I'm going to say she is psula in that case. All right. So now the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, this was what we referenced back before the Rav Asi held like Rabbi Yochanan, basically, which is Rabbi Yochanan says, the divya makshir ba, makshir bebita. The Rav Asi's explanation, the Mishnah must follow the position of Rabbi Yochanan, because that's how he explains the two cases in the Mishnah, which is that she is ksheira and her daughter is considered to be ksheira. The divya posel, ba, posel bebita. The one who says that she is pasul, says also that her daughter is pasul. Meaning that there's no distinction between her and her daughter. The believability of this woman applies not only to her, but to her daughter. Rabbi Elazar, again, now, Machloket Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar Omer, the Dibrei HaMakshir Ba Posel Bebita. Even Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Lazar say she is ne'emenet by herself, about herself. She is not ne'emenet about the daughter. Amar Abba, my time with Rabbi Lazar. What's Rabbi Lazar's logic behind Rabbi Lazar's position that we believe her about herself, but not about her daughter? Bishlama ihi itla chazaka de kashrut. The reason is because she has a chazaka running in her favor. She has a chazkat kashrut until now because she's a woman who didn't have any sfeikot surrounding her. So she has a chazkat kashrut. Now enter the scenario. The scenario casts dispersions on her chazaka. But her chazaka still stands. So now you're taking a sfeik and you're trying to undermine her chazaka. Sfeik is not strong enough to undermine her chazaka. Therefore she is ne'emenet. Bibita leitla chazaka de kashrut. Then the daughter is born of a sfeik. You can't say the daughter has a chazkat kashrut because her whole birth is surrounded by this problem of doubt. There's doubt surrounding the whole issue of her birth. If that's the case, how can you say that she has a chazkat kashrut? She doesn't have a chazkat kashrut. She has a chazkat safek. If she has a chazkat safek, and now you have another safek that you're saying we should believe the woman or not, over there we're not going to believe her. So that's Rabbi Lazar's logic. The question is then, what's Rabbi Yochanan's logic? Because the Gemara asks what's Rabbi Lazar's logic, assuming that Rabbi Yochanan, for sure, his logic is easy to understand. So over here, the Rishonim take different approaches, some of which are very simple, which is that if she's believed vis-a-vis herself, then she's also believed versus vis-a-vis her daughter, because her chazaka is just as good as a chazaka for her daughter. If she has a chazkat kashrut, then her daughter, who is born of her, also carries that same chazkat kashrut. So that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is that we have a Bari claim here by the woman and a Shema against that. And Bari will trump Shema even for the situation of the daughter, not just for the situation of the mother. Because of the Bari claim of the mother, that has influence over the whole scenario. Not just her status, but her daughter's status. Whereas the Ritva says that we have her be believed about her daughter just to keep consistency. Because if we do not give a consistency between her din and her daughter's din, it will actually result in a ludicrous outcome where we're believing her about herself and she can go after and marry a Kohen, yet the daughter cannot marry a Kohen. And how is that plausible that the mother is totally fine and the daughter is a psula? So in order to have consistency, we believe her, that believability carries over to her daughter in order to maintain the din in a consistent manner. So now the Gemara says, Eitve Rabbi Lazar the Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Lazar challenges Rabbi Yochanan from the Braita that we quoted before, but says, Bamei Devarim Amurim, Beidu Tisha Begufa. The Braita said that she's believed about herself. Everybody says the Vlad is a shtuki. Shtuki means mishat kinoto. When he asks, who's my daddy? Say, just keep it to yourself because you don't want to know this information. We don't have this information. It's questionable. So my love shtuki upasul. When you say shtuki, isn't it shtuki is a negative term? Which means that the daughter is considered to be a pasul. Lo, shtuki v'kasher. Yes, this is a fake here, but we're going to put it inside kashrut. Umi'ika shtuki kasher. Wait a minute. Since when is the terminology shtuki used just to say, yeah, this is a safek? Shtuki is a negative term, which means that this child has a safek surrounding them, and therefore they are a pasul. That's basically the outcome. You don't call somebody a shtuki and say, yeah, you're a shtuki, but you're okay. Shtuki is a term that carries weight with it, carries baggage with it, which means that you're a pasul. So Mara says, in kidishmuel, damashmuel, atzrakoanim omdim, upere shechad mehem, uba'al. So we have 10 Kohanim standing there. We know for sure they're 10 Kohanim. One of them then went and had Biyah with this woman. We do not know which of these Kohanim did it. But we do know for sure that it was a Kohen. So clearly the baby that is born is a Kasher because there was only Kohanim here. So now what do we say? Ubala Vlad Shtuki. Wait a minute. A Vlad Shtuki? As in a Shtuki. We only have Kohanim here. How could the Vlad be a Shtuki? My Shtuki. Ilem me mashtiki in oto minichse aviv. We basically say you're not going to get any inheritance over here because you can't prove who your father is. Pshita, of course. I mean, what claim does this guy have? He's going to go to one of these people and say, I have a claim against you? He doesn't know who the person is. He has no clue who his father is. He can't go and make a claim on the inheritance of any of these individuals. We don't allow him to become a full-fledged Kohen. Why not? 10 Kohanim over here. This kid is Mimono Shach HaKohen. So why can't he be a Kohen? So with this we learn together in Yevamot, Dichtiv. The pasuk says, "Vayta lo ulezaro acharav brit kunat olam." Lo ulezaro acharav. Only he and zo acharav. Zaro, mish zaro miyuchas acharav. Someone who knows his yichus, who knows that the child knows his father, and they know that they are clearly in that yichus. Yatzazesh ain zaro miyuchas acharav. This individual has no idea who his father is. He has no idea who his yichus is. So ain ochanami. Let's say this: ain ochanami. The kid is kasher. There's no way that he's not a kosher because he's nival. There's only a kohanim here, so he's for sure kosher. But he can't act like a kohen, even though he is a kohen. He can't go in and act like a kohen because there's another requirement in order to be a kohen to eat truma, to eat kodeshim. Not only that you are born to a kohen, but you know which kohen you were born to. And that's lo ulazaro acharav, him and the zaro acharav, mishim yuchas acharav. People who know their lineage are kohanim, are entitled to act like kohanim. Someone who doesn't know, he might be a kohen, but he's not entitled to act like a kohen. He cannot do avoda. So here you see the word shtuki, according to Shmuel, is used in a context where it means shtuki v'kasher. The baby is clearly kasher. He's not, he's pasul to be a kohen, but he is a kasher. He can't be on active duty as a kohen, but he is a kasher. So to over here, that's what it means in our braita. When we say that it means that bita is shtuki, just means that, yes, shtuki, but kasher. So yes, if it's a kohen, and she says it's a kohen, the child will not be able to act as a kohen, or be active duty as a kohen if it's a male. If it's a female, she'll be kshira the kuna. Because in terms of psul, we don't say there's any problem here. Question simply is, can they be an active kohen? That they can't be. The word shtuki can be used in that terminology, where it means shtuki means safek v'kasher. And that's what it means in the braita. Safek v'kasher. Whether it's a kohen or not a kohen, doesn't really matter. It'll have different implications, but definitely can be shtuki and kasher. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, the braita is not a disproof to my position. Okay, we're going to stop here on the last line on Yud Gimel Amud Bet.